Hello and welcome to The Shape of Work, a podcast series by SpringWorks. My name is Anoop and I am your host. Each week, we'll be talking to top people managers across the world on the future of work and how it's shaping our workplace. So sit back and get ready to find out more from these movers and shakers as we have a no-holds-barred, anything-goes conversation with them about their journey, their insights, their thoughts, and most importantly, their ideas and vision for the workplace of the future. Join in on the conversation, leave a comment, and don't forget to hit that subscribe button.
Welcome to another episode of the Shape of Work podcast. Joining us today is the co-founder and CEO of Livestorm, Giles Pitor. Giles, how are you doing today?
Hey, thank you for having me. Really fantastic. Good, thank you.
Fantastic. Giles, before we get into the conversation and some very interesting topics up for discussion today, even if I may say so, personally very interesting for me. But before that, let's set some context for the listeners. Tell us a little bit about yourself. What is it that you do? I mean, we know you are the co-founder, CEO. What is Livestorm? And a little bit about your journey as well.
Yeah, absolutely. So my name is Gilles, co-founder, CEO of Livestorm, as you said. So Livestorm is what we call a video engagement platform. So essentially what it means is we can host group events from 10 to 3,000 people, essentially. That runs from HR type of events, so all hands meeting, up to kind of the good old marketing webinar that you run with your lead and prospect. So we can cover all that spectrum of events. And the goal of Livestorm is to increase your video stack besides Zoom, besides all the traditional tools for that specific use case that I've just explained. So this is what we do today. We have around almost 5,000 customers now across, you know, all the different continents, and a team of 160 now. And, you know, to give you an idea, we were just about 30 on January 2020. So it's been a really wide run today.
Crazy, right? I mean, 30 to 160. We have ourselves at SpringWorks doubled in the past year, but we have not hired 130 people. I think for us, it's more like 75, 80 odd people.
That's already a really good milestone, double in 1 year. It's really impressive.
Yeah. But, you know, along with that, and of course, we will go to the video side of things at a later point. But before that, let me ask you a very important question. What does it feel like to hire 130 people in a span of 18 months?
Yeah, it's it's crazy because, you know, I kind of forced myself to remember every single name. It's been like some kind of personal challenge for a while to remember all the names, all the birth dates, all the different specific stuff about people, because I wanted to have that kind of involvement. And also because for the personal challenge, at some point it really got really difficult actually to learn by heart all the different birth names. I still have all the names, so I still have that, but the birth dates were really, really hard. But anyway, so it's been really crazy. And I think that the fact that we were remote in a way kind of smoothed it up, because you don't have those 10 people coming through the door every single month, creating this, you know, feeling of who is who, and you don't know each other. So I think it's been easier in that way, because it kind of diluted this period of unknown and kind of overwhelming, you know what I'm saying? So it's been crazy. I think remote helped. And I think it's also surfaced a lot of questions about culture, about how you communicate. And, you know, we're just getting through it. We were just solving stuff, and there is still a lot of things to do, but we're after a year, we're actually still trying to solve stuff, and we're doing a really good work, job till now, but still a lot to do.
Yeah, I can completely relate, because we are in almost the same ship as in, of course, we are not a 1.5 year old company. We are much older than that. So we have been in office, but now we are permanently remote. We took that decision last November that we are never coming back to office, and exclusively all the people that have been hired since have been working.
It's really common these days to see this this kind of transition. Even ourselves, you know, we were like 50% remote in a way, because just it was mostly engineering team, and then obviously when lockdown struck the first time, you know, we all went 100%. And after a while, we're like, you know what, this is working out for us. I don't know about you guys, but you know, it's just it felt better in so many ways. And obviously it has some cons, and we can talk about that later, but you know, it had also so many pros in, you know, so many different areas. So
Of course, you know, like you said, there are cons, but again, we will both be biased here, so let's not go into that, because we can, you know, count the number of pros, I think, throughout the conversation. But Giles, how many of these, like, did you at some point you would have to have hired a recruiting team, right? I'm assuming you were not involved in all 130 conversations. That would be impossible. Or were you?
In many of them, I was. I know, I mean, the only times that I was not involved in conversations is when actually the person in place I was hiring was here for such a long time that that person was pretty much part of the culture. We knew each other at a point where I didn't have to object on anything in terms of culture fit. You know, so typically the CX team is actually owned today by the first Lifestyle employee, so Elif, head of CX, and you know, she knows me by heart, she knows the company by heart, so she you know, every single hire is, you know, spot on. Same goes for Thibaut, head of growth, and so on and so forth. So I wasn't part of every hire, but I think at least 50% of them, I was at some point talking to them in terms of, you know, final step, culture fit, whatever. Or it was one of my co-founders. That was pretty much it. But that was for every single onboarding. I saw every one of them for the onboardings.
Wow, that's fantastic. Now, on the topic of culture fit, this is an interesting topic that I keep bringing up with guests. There is this debate of culture fit versus culture add, and which is essentially, you know, with culture fit, if you're not conscious about the biases, you will end up with a bunch of person who are thinking the same things, who could all be saying yes to you. Won't really, you know, I mean, of course, there are many other aspects of culture which can solve for that.
Yeah.
But what are your thoughts on culture fit versus culture add?
I think the most brain thing is when actually trying to, you know, change status quo is something that is actually part of the culture. You know, when it's actually part of what you are and you actually bring people in that are here to bring some changes, then you have less that bias. I mean, we all have bias and we always have bias, but you have to be conscious of that. That's first step. Second step is actually own that, you know, own the change that you want to bring and then make that part of the culture. So typically one of the things that we look for is people that are really proactive, they are autonomous, they are resourceful, and they are really proactive in what they bring, and also they're really curious about different side of the business, which means that typically product ideas will come from sales, will come from even human resources, and all those conversations tend to blend in and they kind of mix up. And this is why we look for kind of jack of all trades profiles, because they have so much to bring to the table. And so we kind of encourage the change. And I'm not saying we don't have any bias. I think we still have bias. This is certainly something we still work on and trying to challenge ourselves. But I think whenever you look for people that can bring the changes because of who they are and, you know, what they can do, then you probably have less of that bias that you mentioned. But again, maybe I'm just blind. Maybe I'm totally saying that when being biased. I don't know. It's a tough question.
Yeah. I mean, that's exactly how bias works. We are in our own bubble. Maybe we don't even realize that. But of course, just, you know, recognizing, acknowledging the fact that there could be bias. That's the first step. And that's, in most cases, you know, 95% of the people don't even reach that stage, right? Even acknowledging the bias.
Yeah, I think one of the good things that I try to find in every single manager that we hire, because we hired actually a lot for the past 2 years, because we need to build that management layer. Yeah. One of the cool things is I wanted people that were actually going to challenge who we are, that will bring experiences, because, you know, let's face it, this is my first company. I don't know nothing about sales, right? I mean, I have no idea about what is sales in SaaS. You know, I'm just like a guy that, you know, built something right out of college. So I brought people in that knew how to do sales on a scale-ups, then people that have perhaps like 20, 30 years of experience. You know, those people, they come with strong opinionated ideas. So if you're not able to absorb that, absorb the change, absorb the ideas, you will stay in that status quo and your culture will just stay still, stagnant. And this is not what you look for. This is not what you want. Because, you know, there is a correlation between being stagnant as a culture and having something that is an organization that changes over the time that grows, et cetera, et cetera. You cannot have that with a stagnant culture, I believe. But yeah.
Yeah. This early in your company's organization's journey, and it would be an interesting question, how do you think culture gets defined in an organization?
You know what? I have no idea.
What is happening at Livestorm?
I get your question, but the thing is, when I look back, we're really bad at it. We were really, really bad at it. We were really young, and you know, we didn't think about it this through. I mean, the usual thing that you do when you launch a startup, when you start reading about it, you obviously there is a product, the MVP, the go to market, etc. But also, you know, you put some values, blah blah blah, and then you're trying to define the culture. We didn't do that. We didn't do that at all. I think we asked ourselves the question really late in the process, and the thing that we did is at some point just, okay, we need to delegate higher, but we need to know that the person that's going to be hired by that third-party person needs to also have some kind of fit, you know, it has some kind of fit with us. So how do we, and this is actually where we started to ask ourselves the question about what are the culture, what is the culture, what are the values, et cetera, et cetera. So, and then we just, you know, did some kind of introspection with the people that were here for a long time and trying to put some words around it. We want something that is actionable. We didn't want something that is really kind of bullshitty, startup-y, whatever, has something that, you know, has some kind of concrete actions around it. This is why we put the words on being resourceful, being autonomous, being curious about the different areas of Livestorm. So typically someone that is going to ask only about one thing that is their job is probably going to have less fit than someone that is merely that is interested in everything, you know, about what is the MR, what is the go-to-market strategy, even though I'm just a developer, you know, that's something that is I find super interesting. So those are the tiny signals that we're trying to find in every people we hire. And I think it's been pretty good. We were late in the game, but I think now we're, doing a pretty good job. I mean, my team is doing a pretty good job.
Yeah. No, I mean, that's exactly what I was asking. I don't think you need to have a defined set of guidelines for culture on day one, but I think you have answered my question anyway. Being a remote company, what is the most important thing that makes the company run smoothly?
You have to define a system that is self-sufficient. That's my way to summarize it. Essentially, what it means is you have to have clarity in the communication and have that as much as possible in a kind of self-service basis. This is why we rely so much on Notion. For example, Notion is the tool we use for, you know, for the ones who don't know, is some kind of Google Doc. You know, Google Doc and Slack have a baby, that's Notion. And essentially, we have all the knowledge base in. Everything is there, you know, from processes to tools to team to HR best practices to perks, whatever. Everything is in there. So, and the goal is basically to, if you have any request, you type the keyword and you'll find it on Notion. That's how I'm thinking about it. Same goes for having a clear vision of your organization, because one thing that is really important when you're on the remote is you don't know who is the person next to you because you have literally no one next to you. Okay. So you need to know where you lie in an organization. So we use, we use Miro, we could use whatever, and you just build this entire map of the organization, person by person, and you can know who are the relationships that you have, where are the relations that you have with every single people. So that's another thing. So really being transparent about the organization, have a clear async self-service kind of knowledge base, and have rituals. The last brick is really rituals of communications, either operational or what we call casual rituals. So operationals is you have kickoff, retro, all hands, all those operations, so for everyone syncs in one place. Those are really, really important. You have to be there, you have to listen, you have to be interested to make sure you don't miss any kind of information. It's kind of a housekeeping, you know, kind of as if you're going to brush your teeth. You want to just be informed and get information by yourself, be there to learn. And then on the other hand, you have the rituals that are casual, because you want to have forcing functions so that people can know each other and talk to each other. So typically, you know, to give you a concrete example, we have this coffee break room that is basically a live storm room. And whenever someone connects, that prompts a notification on Slack. And then people can know that, Frank just joined the coffee room. You know, let's join him. And the cool thing that now with it, we're looking back is that whenever someone joins that coffee break room, you pretty much know who is going to join afterwards. So you kind of created this motion of people that could get together at some point. So we have a lot of those. So board game night and stuff like that. And, you know, it's working pretty well. So I think those are the three main foundations. And then obviously there are tons of different ones, but those are the three main ones.
Yeah, interesting that you brought up rituals. I mean, I do think, you know, they play an important part, but you have actually formalized it in this form of this, with this term rituals, which I find very interesting. For me personally, I see remote on empathy async tools. So async tools is something that you mentioned, and then rituals, which is interesting. Very interesting, because without even, you know, formalizing that term, I think within our company also, we have so many of these rituals. Yeah. Of course, you know, we use different tools that we have ourselves built. And then now we have also put on the Slack app store and such, MS Teams app store. Interesting stuff. Now, coming back to video, coming back to async, this is where the real conversation, I mean, I'm not saying all of the conversation, that was also very important, but this is what I am really, really curious about. Yeah. If the communication is async, where does video come into the picture? Where does video come into the picture?
Oh, nice. Well,
apart from, of course, you know, the webinar side of things that you spoke about, that's the obvious side of,
Well, both, actually. Video can be async. They can be on demand, right? So so typically, let me, an example, whenever we do onboardings, we have those on-demand videos are pre-recorded because it's usually the same speech. So in order to spare some time, to save some time, then we're going to have those pre-recorded and just be present in terms of some kind of Q&A. But the video content is pre-recorded, and you can actually apply that to tons of different types of content. So we also have that in our documentation. If something is really tricky to explain using, you know, by writing, then we have an actual video on top to on demand to explain that a bit better. So to do that, we use either Livestorm if you want to have, you know, some kind of tracking of people joining and listening and asking questions, and if you want to have some even live Q&A at the end, because you can merge both, then you're going to use Livestorm. And then if it's something that you want to be embedded in the documentation, then we're going to use Loom, for example. Loom, and so we have a combination of both. So when do we use live then? Well, live is typically for the rituals. So rituals are always live. They're always sync. It's the moment that we share. It's the moment we engage with each other. So we ask questions, polls, we react, we send some file, we put some music, some whatever. So we use Livestorm for that. And the goal is to have a big sync moment, like where we all are live, talk to each other live, and engage with each other. It could be all hands for like the big company-wide, could be kickoff meetings and sync with team, well, team syncs, essentially. And even for the rituals, for the casual ones, we're going to have those tiny rooms already set up. People can join whenever. And, you know, that's... So, and the reason why we don't have async, well, we have a bit of async also casual rituals, but most of them are live is because, you know, human interaction at some point matter, and you have to be live to have those quality kind of human interactions. So, yeah, this is where we stand on async versus live.
Yeah, that makes sense. That makes sense. Actually, that's very similar to what we also do at SpringWorks. But Giles, you coming from a company, I mean, you built the company that is doing video with Livestorm. What is the future of, and I'm just talking about within like an internal communication, the world will be more remote. As much as companies would like to bring people back to offices, I think with the advent of Web 3.0, which is again a separate conversation altogether, of course, now with video, Giles, you have found this company that does video. So I'm assuming you have thesis around video. What does internal communication look like? Like I read this, I think, on Twitter now 6 weeks back, and this has stuck with me. Mm-hmm. Like someone had mentioned, you know, Zoom is the dark ages of internal communication. And they had written this, of course, in the context of the Facebook multiverse and VR. I personally don't believe we will go there. But what does internal communication with companies being more remote, for sure? I think I'm sold on that with the 3.0. We are going for a more decentralized world. And that means, you know, remote will be all the more common, even though some companies are calling people back to offices. What does that future look like to you?
Yeah. So let me bounce back on the VR thing from the multiverse thing for Facebook. I don't think that's a thing either, because, you know, when you think about it, a remote is basically the workplace being shifted from primary workplace. The office initially becomes now the home. The home becomes the primary workplace. So, and the office becomes the secondary workplace, just pretty much like a co-working even, you know? And having this multiverse VR kind of thing is basically the office trying to enter your home, trying to bring back, which is really like this is not how it's supposed to be. It's like this forcing function from the past that's trying to merge into what's the situation now. And that's not how it should be, actually. So you don't want to have an office at home. You want to have your home as the office. That's a really entire paradigm. It's subtle saying that like this, but it's really a different paradigm. So what about internal communication? So I just say, so I'm actually, you know, I'm the first to say that I think Zoom technology is really cool and they have this really cool compression algorithm, etc. But what I agree on is that this UX, and I'm just talking about UX and product, is basically a legacy of something that has been existing for 20 years. So basically, it's not because you put, and you know, for example, you have this, we all live through this greed of 50, 100, 150 people coming to this room Zoom, right? And room Zoom and thinking and speaking at the same time. And you have all this mess and, oh, that person is not muted and this one is not muted. And this is not communication. This is basically a analog reproduction of, let's put people in a place, in a room and call that a meeting. That's not a meeting. That's not internal communication. That's just like you putting people in a room and calling that a meeting. It's not that. So I think the way I'm seeing the market, if I had to re-segment it, restructure it today, is with the internal communication paradigm in mind. You have, on one hand, really frequent calls that are not complex, something that you're going to have on a daily basis, just like we're having now, for example, if we were co-workers. And that's daily collaboration. That's what Zoom does. That's what WebEx does. That's what Teams even does at some point. This is what they specialize, at least, in how they were initially built. Then you have, on the other end of the spectrum, really big events. So and really controlled and big events with networking. This is more the virtual event kind of thing, right? And it's not internal. It's really external. You have like people coming in. You have booth. You have this networking solution, et cetera. So it's a really different set of tools. And in the middle, well, you have this big chunk of events that takes place on a weekly basis, on a monthly basis, that are actually group events that requires control. We don't have those grids. You have one speaker, or maybe multiple speakers, but not everyone is able to talk. Not everyone can access different features. So it has control. It is great for board meetings, for all hands, for internal training, onboarding. And that's a really new market that's going to have pretty really good tailwind because of the remote and hybrid workplace. It is a really big chunk in the middle. And I think that's specific. Chunk is a market itself. It's a really market. It's a new product category that needs to be named for ourselves. We've called this actually this segment video engagement platform because we think this is actually where we bring more value. But yeah, internal communications today is going to be there. So group events that happen frequently where you need control because your internal audience is just like another audience. It needs to be controlled. It needs to have specific features to engage, et cetera, et cetera. And maybe there is a fourth category that doesn't appear here in my spectrum, but could be interesting to look upon is those tools where you can actually some kind of evergreen, constant connection to a tiny group of people or just one person, right? So I don't know, I forgot the name of the tool that does that, but I think it's pretty cool. And we can actually, we reproduce that in Lifesum as well with some rooms. But essentially, it means that you have one person that is always there as if they were actually working next to you. And you can actually just turn off your microphone and talk to that person.
Yeah.
And those are kind of evergreen offices, evergreen peer working, whatever. And that's perhaps an even sub segment of that market that is emerging that I find also really interesting. And I don't know about this one. We'll see how that comes. But I'm really confident about the three chunks that I've just mentioned here. And this is actually how we picture the market today at Lifesum.
Yeah, very interesting stuff. Facebook, I think, has something like that, where you can constantly keep video on. At least we were, you know, exploring this when we were back in office for some of the people who were permanently remote even at that point. And I think our ops team uses Discord for this. So they have an always on room and they just, you know, switch on the mic whenever they want to.
Yeah. And we have actually the same thing. We have like those instant meeting room that we call it. It's basically a link, just like the coffee break room. And for example, the CX team has that. And they call that some kind of virtual co-working, and everybody can connect and jump in, jump off whenever they want. It's nice. It's a way to, you know, keep that casual link. Sometimes you don't have to talk about work. It could be something silly while you work, you know, just like any other office.
Yeah. Going back to, you know, keeping the engagement going, what are the sort of things that Lifesum does? Apart from the rituals that you spoke about, is there anything else?
Well, that's a really ongoing thing. You know, we have within the people team, we have two person actually dedicated to find a way to engage, to find a way to have to increase to improve the experience overall. So, and that's actually part of their scope. So typically, there are forcing functions that we have also in Slack for. Typically, we use a tool called Donut, where, you know, that will pop up some kind of, that will surface some kind of topic, and everybody can join. Respond in the thread in Slack when we join the conversations live and trying to talk about it. So that is not mandatory. It's just, you know, there for the ones who are interested in. We have also some async games in a dedicated channel on Slack, or sometimes we try to spice things up in the all hands. So one thing that we did for a year now, because we had actually 100-ish people, is to have like baby's picture of everyone and trying to guess who is who. So that was also it's a fun one to engage people with each other. So it's pretty nice. So there's a tons of tiny examples. Comes as if you sum those up, you know, you start to have something interesting. But I think what I'm trying to say is, I think it's important now to have someone dedicated to those aspects. You know, the office management kind of job is slightly migrating to have some kind of employee experience role, when you can actually have to deal with people working remote at the office, trying to think that as a whole, as a new paradigm itself, you know?
Yeah, 100%. I mean, I have seen director of Notion now as a role as well. And given how important Notion is to just be this knowledge wikier, this thing of, but for some big company, I saw a role, a job opening that said director of Notion. They're only responsible for maintaining the Notion wiki.
I mean, that makes sense to me. You know, I'm such a pain in the ass because I always ask people, keep the Notion tidy, you know, clean those up, remove all the files. I mean, it's a full-time job, you know, it's a chief of staff of Notion.
Yeah. Director of remote communication. Do you think that's going to be?
Yeah, it's a thing. If at some point we grow past a certain point, I mean, it will make sense to have someone to do that even at Lifesum. So, yeah, I think.
Just someone dedicated to making the communication better, whether that be processes or working with someone who might not be very good at communicating with her.
Yeah, that's. That's a really cool job position. I never thought of that. Thank you for that.
What other things do you see happening with this future that is going more and more remote?
I think,
apart from the obvious things that we all know, right? People can work from anywhere. They can spend more time with family.
I think one thing that I found still... Well, it's the usual. I think it's, you know, just history repeating itself. But this shift, it happened really fast. Now we have this a lot of companies now, specifically in the tech, transitioning to this new way of working. Remote has booming, and you know, 2 years ago it was just a thing with, you know, nomads and whatever. We're like, okay, this is like a tiny segment of population, but now it's becoming a real thing. And at the same time, I think administration, whatever country you're mentioning, is really, really slow at actually acknowledging that, meaning that you have a lot of gray area on how do you support remote work. Let me give you an example. We wanted to have, you know, one of the reasons why we actually opened the US branch for Livestorm is because we actually needed to hire there with the best perks possible. But guess what? It was not possible without having a branch. So, and there are actually a lot of examples like this in Europe, even though we are a union, right? And there is a lot of examples like that where the tax system, the HR policies and whatever, they're not unified, meaning that it makes us, it you know, struggle. It's really hard to hire in different places because we are remote and talents are everywhere, and you have to really walk your way through administration to find a way to hire properly and, you know, have everyone on the same page. And it will be so much easier for that. And yeah, so I think we still have a really long way to go on the from an administration standpoint. And, but that's probably something that will happen. I think it will happen because, you know, remote work and hybrid work is here to stay. So those things will evolve. And I think it's going to be a major shift for a lot of people. You know, it will change the freelancing status that was really, really precarious in France, for example. It will change HR policies for foreign workers. All those things, they will change. And I think it will have a lot of impact on not only your economy, but also those tiny villages or tiny towns that were really isolated. You know, I saw this article the other day of tiny villages in Spain that was actually gaining a lot of economic traction because a lot of remote workers were actually settled, you know, in those new villages, and the internet was pretty good. So, you know, they have both worlds. They have like living in the countryside, being remote, having good internet, and they could still work in tech with obviously all the perks of the salary and whatever that, you know, is happening in tech. So, and I think that's going to happen more and more. So it's going to be more decentralized. The financial perk of working in tech will probably be more decentralized more and more. So, you know, I think the biggest changes are yet to come from an economical and financial and even political standpoint. You know, we're just in our tech bubble, but I think the greatest is actually yet to come.
So, oh, yeah, 100%. Totally. I mean, ideally, I don't think a conversation where I say totally agree with you is the best conversation. But here, you know, we are just on, let's say, same bandwidth, the same sort of thought process, even in India, right? Now that we are hiring from everywhere. And there are, like you said, you read this article about a small village in Spain. Similar things are happening in India. Smaller towns, smaller cities, because of the fact that, you know, now we are able to hire from anywhere. And the same has happened with Bangalore, for example, which was sort of the, you know, the back room or the outsourcing hub. Now developers are realizing, you know, they could be paid US salaries. So the salaries salaries have gone up, and
But then, you know, you can ask yourself, you know, we talk about the pros and how things it could, how good it could be for the people impacted positively by those things. But then you can ask yourself, okay, what about the negative stuff? And one of the things that come to mind is the kind of San Francisco effect, where salary gets so high that the household get really, really high. Every there is a big inflation, and then people are pushed out of the cities because they cannot afford it. So maybe there will be also some kind of downside effect on that. You know, maybe it will average out for the rents and whatever, but I think they will go up actually because there will be more demand on working in those towns and villages and whatever. So you know a lot of important shifts, I think, to come. We'll see.
Oh yeah, 100%. While on that point, you know, these HR challenges, some of the startups are trying to solve. I think remote is there, Oyster HR is there, that is trying to solve. But yeah, of course, you were more talking from the standpoint of the administration itself, mm-hmm. changing those rules and policies. Great conversation, Giles. I think, I mean, we just vibed a lot. So hopefully, I mean, there was, to be honest, there is enough value in that conversation for listeners, irrespective of the fact that we were agreeing with everything throughout.
It was really interesting. You know, I don't always talk about those things. So it was, I'm sorry if I wasn't clear to the audience. It's just like me randomly thinking what I'm speaking. So, you know, but anyway, it was really interesting. I really enjoyed that all. So thank you so much for having me today.
Aren't those the best conversations where you're putting your thoughts out? Giles, where can people connect with you? Is LinkedIn the best place? Are you also on Twitter? Where else can they read more from you?
I think Twitter, well, I'm kind of boring on Twitter. I just like to tweet stuff from the company. So I guess, LinkedIn, add me on LinkedIn. Happy to keep the conversation going.
Perfect. That will be in the show notes of the podcast anyway. Thank you so much, Giles, for coming on the Shape of Work podcast.